Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
If you change your mind,
take a chance.
I'm the first in line.
Take a chance.
Honey, I'm still free.
Take a chance
on me.
Take a chance.
If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got no place to go when you're feeling down. If you're all alone.
Even across the board. Now, I live in Paradise Beach. I've been paying MSBUs for the last 7 years, and I don't even have a fire station. I was a firefighter for 45 years. I worked for the city of Pensacola for 30 years. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. This county did not look into things too well when they let that station die. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, this is Gil Burgle, as he says. He is a longtime Pensacola Fire Department member, and he lives over by Paradise Beach, basically over towards Inverarity Point. And he says, as has often been talked about in the context of the failure to have enough fire protection for certain areas, that, you know, the people in his area, they can't afford insurance. I mean, people on a fixed income, when that station went away, you went from, you know, normal insurance prices to $5,000-$6,000 a year for home insurance, which is insane. For that price, you could almost afford Medicare, or not Medicare, Obamacare, sorry, for a month. Anyway, back to the point. It's ridiculous, and they've been working on this for years. This is the Navy land swap deal, or land acquisition deal, that has kind of been in the works and almost there for all of this time. The good news is that we really do think that it's almost here. The bad news is that for nearly a decade, by the time all is said and done, they will have not had fire protection in that area. Ashley Hoffberger.
Just to put some details on those numbers, 55 days.
Oh, sorry. Not on the topic of Paradise Beach, but on the topic of an MSBU, which is a flat fee for service for all of the Escambia County residents. Remember, the beachgoers currently pay quite a bit more, and the one initial proposal was to make them pay a lot more. 11,000, eleven times as much as they're currently paying, which is a crazy jack up in their rates. But there's now the proposal is either a same rate for everybody, or maybe same rate for everybody and some other kind of additional money to go in from SRIA or from locals somehow or other, still to be determined. But one of the questions that comes up in the context of this fire service for the beach is getting a higher level of protection. Okay, A is a claim. It's not clear that that's true anymore. But B, part of the response is, yeah, but we have all of these visitors that we've got to take care of. And so taking care of them and making sure that they're safe from any fire and or calls for health service, because obviously fire also does that, that's a very important thing. And sort of the mainland versus the beach, the residents versus the visitors, who's getting great service or allegations there versus who's not getting, that's all kind of in the mix here. That's what she's talking about when she brings up this statistic.
Just to put some details on those numbers, 55 days out of last year, so 15% of the days of 2024, we had over 20,000 visitors to Pensacola Beach. 90% of those are locals.
20,000 visitors at a time. And, of course, we peak at, like, you know, Blue Angels Air Show, but, you know, 200,000 is crazy. But 20,000 is a lot of people to be adding to the beach, and that means extra people can – I mean, if you push 25 or 50,000 people onto an island, you're talking about the entire city of Pensacola being added to the island, right? So then how much more fire service, how much more EMS, how much more everything, law enforcement, would you need if you, you know, quadrupled the population of a town temporarily, right? That's kind of what they're getting at. Anyway, the Paradise Beach station is something that, again, Gil Burgle talked quite a bit about. And part of this conversation is the idea that, look, if you're charging, you know, one area more based on service and one area less based on service, well, again, the Paradise Beach people, what are they getting for their money?
I was promised by another commissioner several years ago that this fire station on Bower was going to go.
I assume that's Jeff Bergage.
Property was supposed to be with the Navy. We turned around and he told me it was going to be 90 days. Then it was going to be 60 days. The paperwork was going to be signed. And 30 days. It's been 2 years. 2 years. We haven't had anything.
Yeah, which is bad. And look, the county knows this, right? I mean, they're aware. And I've been talking with Wes Moreno about this problem for years. I'm trying to get something solved over there. And so now.
Now, you're talking about another 2 to 3 years before the fire station is built. That's 10 years we're going to have without a fire station. I think this board and this administration has to take a little bit of negligence on this part.
And that's fair.
Because that's 10 years is too long. Way too long.
He's not wrong.
And these people are going to be doing without for 10 years. Our premiums are not going to go down. They're going to keep going up.
Yeah, this is, again, the ISO rating and, you know, how you pay your insurance based on the lack of available fire service within a 5-mile distance from you. And, you know, he's like, look, again, you know, I'm old. I'm 75. I just want to be, you know, live my life. I don't want to have to go take a second job so I can afford home insurance because you guys won't build a fire station near me that you had for a while and then haven't had for now, what, 7 or 8 years?
When you're paying over $6,000 a year for homeowners insurance, that's a lot of money.
Oof. Ugh.
A lot of money. And I'm like everybody else. I'm a retired person. I'm living on fixed income. I work myself. I'm 75 years old, and I'm not going back to work. I want to enjoy life a little bit. That's what it's supposed to be about.
Exactly. And by the way, again, the it's not great news, but the good news is we seem to be right on the cusp with, you know, getting this thing done. It's not, I mean, in terms of the Navy giving permission, that's been the hang up is they've got this piece of property they've been trying to get the Navy to give them. And it's just been, well, you know, Navy speed, okay? Which is when you're at war, fast. When you're in bureaucracy, oh my God. You know? Very, very, very slow and many, many, many layers of bureaucracy. So Mike Kohler, who's, of course, you know, had been with the Navy a long time as a nurse, and I think really deserves a lot of credit for this that, you know, maybe he has not gotten appropriately for going to fight to make sure this happens. It's not even in his district. It's in District 1. He's in District 2.
I don't know if you know this. When I first got elected, I went over to CINC in Jacksonville and lobbied for that property. And
I know you did.
And it took longer, but I promised you.
One of the other commissioners was taking all the credit for it, too.
Well, that's okay. I care about just taking care of people.
I love that attitude, by the way. I just care about taking care of people. But, yeah, again, former commissioner in District 1 is the one who's, I assume, is who he's. They don't name names, so it's hard, but I'm assuming that's who he's talking about.
The thing is, I will concede to you the Navy took longer than they should have, but yeah, it's government. But they have committed to me that that property is going to be turned over to us unequivocally. So, and it sounds like it's going to be on the July agenda. And then after that, I know that's probably the number one firehouse that we need to do because the ISO score. And I don't know what the timeline is on that. I honestly don't. Wes, how soon would something like that come together?
We've already started the procurement process.
Okay.
Excellent. As of this morning, they're actually started the procurement. So that's great. That means they really do believe it's happening. That means that they're starting to act to buy the stuff they need to make the station happen, right?
So coming down here today, I hope that gives you a little bit of relief. I know it's not there yet, but I can promise you I've been working on that, and it's not even in my district.
And well, I know Commissioner when I see Stroberger the station built, me. That's when I'll be
well,
satisfied.
I know.
You know, after 7 years, I don't blame him. If, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, when they're running a call in my neighborhood, that's when I'll know we've got fire service, right? Which is, you know, you can't really fault the guy for that perspective. You know, we talked a lot about the drama with the Escambia Children's Trust. By the way, this story about the documents that purport to show that there's a high percentage of the recipients of the Escambia Children's Trust, just because we've been talking about this yesterday a lot, and it's kind of, this is the same meeting where that had come up. And, you know, 60, 70, maybe 80% of the money is going in, according to some spreadsheets, going to salaries for the agencies that are getting funding from the Escambia Children's Trust. And it's kind of being told like this is some dramatic scandal or something. That's like paying the teachers to serve the kids. Like, I don't get, I mean, service, what do you think services are? Services is people. You know, you might not be buying handy snacks. You know, and paper towels, and kickballs, but if you're providing a service to kids, you're going to be paying people to provide a service to kids. No, you could be doing volunteer, okay? Or maybe they used to be volunteer and now they're paid. That might not be good. That might be good too. It's all, I just, I don't know. I'm not grasping the scandal yet that even if three quarters of, it's not like they're paying the management, you know, in charity work, a lot of times, you know, you want to keep your cost of management below 10% of your total revenue. That's typically a industry goal. And you know, for charitable stuff, but this notion that they're paying, yeah, I don't know, 70 or 80% of their money to salaries. Well, so does the school. Is that a scandal? I don't get why this is anyway, but that's a separate issue. Back to the meeting on Thursday, just for context, we've been talking about the Escambia Children's Trust and all the drama over that. In that same meeting, they did something really good. Okay. They didn't settle the MSBU thing yet, but they did do a vote to finally authorize the funding for the construction of it's five, but it's four because one of them is just an upgrade, but it's basically five new fire stations. Lumen May.
Well, I would in the discussion, we talked about a fire school and a burn house at the Midtown Commerce Park, as well as looking in District 3 at an opportunity for another firehouse. And so I would ask that you accept this friendly amendment that Mr. Gilmore, we find the location and we move forward with the advanced firehouse and training, which will probably bring in tourism dollars to be added. Yeah, I talked about it at the
It was not in the presentation. We did talk about it. I love it. I agree. And I would like to amend my motion to include the fire school as well.
So the fire school is the training facility and an opportunity to, you know, obviously do like the police do, which is train their people, create firefighters, do advanced training certification and enhancing skills and all that. Good. What's interesting is, did you hear where they want to put it? The Midtown Commerce Park. You know what that is? That's a Superfund site on Palafox. Yeah, remember they, you know, contamination, move the people out, create a giant desert, put a big fence around it, and nobody does anything there. And for years, the county has been trying to, Midtown Commerce Park. It's a place where you can build stuff. The ground is suitable. You know, it's fine to be able to do the, you know, I mean, I wouldn't put a drinking water well in there, but, you know, like you can put strip malls and surface buildings and stuff up on top. It's fine. So putting that there would really jumpstart that. It might be like kind of the anchor store concept of a first investment, you know. See, the very first thing would be the fire training school right on that facility. And maybe eventually you can develop that land and actually get something out of it instead of it just being kind of a, you know, middle of nothing desert like it is right now. So that's good. I mean, that makes sense to me. And it's a good location because it's very centrally located. The firefighters who go to the school for training, if they're doing advanced stuff, would not have to go far from their other facilities. I mean, you know, Fair Pass is close and District Station 6 and Station 3 are all very close to that. Anyway, Mike Kohler is going to talk about that a little bit. You know, what's the cost of adding that school to the, remember, it was like $32 million for the five new fire stations. Well, how much will it cost to add this?
Do we know the additional cost? And I'm all for it. I just like to know, I have it on the record. Do we know what that would cost, Wes? Or
well, we don't even know if the $32 million is real.
I've talked to several contractors, and we can do the fire school included with the budget that was proposed at the meeting.
Okay, good to hear.
That is correct.
Yeah. Oh, for free. I guess. I don't know what it would. I mean, I would think that alone would be, million, 2 million, something like that. I don't know. But she seems to think that in and of, you know, if we're already spending 32, maybe they'll bonus us a fire school, or they'll include that in the construction costs. Okay.
We do have some gaps, you know, and within District 3, and I just know that there is an opportunity where we would need another firehouse, and I'm very supportive of what you're doing. And at this time, I mean, it's an economy of scale, $32 million, $36
million.
Mean, so I just want to make sure the school and, you know, at least one fire station is included in my district. That's all.
So of five. Well, an additional fire station and a school.
Yep.
Okay.
So we have a motion.
And listen, once they do the back, and Eric may come back and say it's not necessary, but what I did want to just put it on the table.
So there's a motion and a second. Please vote. Motion passes 5-0. Commissioner Hoffberger, pat yourself on the back. That was great leadership. And I think that citizens of Escambia County, if they don't think we believe in fire services now, they haven't been watching what's been going on here for 2 months.
I mean, no, that's true. And also, you know, the raise for the firefighters, bumping it up to, what did Wes tell us? Is not quite $50,000 a year, something like that. I mean, that's good, from like $13 an hour to $16 an hour. That's great. They have been buying apparatus. And I don't know if you noticed it. It happened pretty quick, but did they just throw a $4 million fire station into the mix in a 14-second discussion? I think they did.
We do have some gas.
Where'd it go?
A total of five, well, an additional fire station and a school.
$32 million, $36 million, four fire stations, five fire stations, six fire stations, sold. Like, what? I mean, after 45 minutes of we can't figure out what to do with $500,000 in the Escambia Children's Trust, we're just going to $4 million fire station. Here you go. Done. Like, not even a question. Oh, my God. That's so wild. And by the way, you know, the idea of locating the fire station or co-locating it with the fire training unit on the Midtown Commerce Park, it makes sense because then you have all the apparatus where you have all the training. Like, to have it co-located really does make sense. I'm not sure that's the ideal location for a fire station, only because District 3, Lumen Mays protests to the contrary, District 3 already has great coverage because District 3 has a lot of fires, because District 3 has a lot of, frankly, poor people. I live in District 3. A lot of poor people. Poor people own homes that get caught on fire and have lifestyle practices that create fires, and so you have a lot of fire protection in District 3. Also, the city is right close there, right? That's very close to the line of the city, so you have PFD covering it as well. I don't see the need to have a fire station at Midtown Commerce Park. That, as a, like, where there's a need to build one, that's not it. I mean, for example, you can't, like, drive around that area without just bumping into the squad vehicle from Station 3. It's, like, out and about all the time. It's one of the most widely used. Station 6, same thing. So I would quibble about the need to have a fire station at that location. But anyway, I just thought it was amazing that in the space of about 14 seconds, they apparently all voted to approve a brand new fire station for District 3 with no conversation about what that would mean. Okay. I mean, wow. John Pickens, it's an amazing day. I'm Andrew McKay.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Trust & Will knows that we'll all eventually need a will. How about right now? Trust & Will makes creating your will easy, like while you're lounging on the couch easy. Trust & Will is designed by attorneys but customized by you, and all documents are state-specific and secure. Find your plan at TrustAndWill.com and use offer code RADIO now for 20% off. That's TrustAndWill.com, offer code RADIO. Trust & Will is an online estate planning service. Visit TrustAndWill.com for details.
The Pensacola housing real estate market has been crazy for the past few years.
How do you know when to buy or sell?
You'll need an expert to help you. Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 9 a.m. right after Pensacola Morning News to hear real estate expert Christina Leavenworth with Leavenworth Realty discuss current real estate conditions. That's today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
They do it down on Canvas Sands. They do it at Waikiki. Lazing about the beach all day at night. The cricket's creepy.
Good morning, 528, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Oh, come on, I love this song. You need more squeeze in your life. Oh, it's so good. I know if you're not into that style of music, but I love everything except country. David Wayne is in the... John's so discouraged.
I know.
And it's not
so
even
discouraging.
True. I say that more than it's true. There's actually a lot of country that I enjoy. I just, you know, it's fun to be anti.
And you know, I just recorded that too.
That's
right?
Fine. Okay. David Wayne is in the news. And look, hey, if cat country didn't exist, we wouldn't exist. That's just true.
Yeah. I mean, it's the truth.
Yeah. So I am grateful for the existence of country music. I just don't listen to it. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, Andrew, it's been another long night on Capitol Hill for House Republicans. Apparently, they've just got a regular third shift now. But no kidding. They've been trying to pass a key bill tied to taxes and immigration now. House lawmakers working late as GOP leaders try to rally enough support for the tax and immigration plan. House Speaker Mike Johnson said to be in tough negotiations, needing nearly full party support to pass the bill.
Maybe it's that idea that if we just inflict a little sleep deprivation on them, we'll get things passed. You know, why don't they play some loud metal and, you know, it's like Gitmo politics, I guess, is what this is. Go on, David.
Well, China's warning the U.S. now to pause President Trump's ambitious new missile defense plan. Beijing says it's gravely concerned about the plan to build a $175 billion Golden Dome missile shield, which he said would be ready in under 3 years. China says the system could increase the chances of turning outer space into a battlefield.
Oh, no, it changes the balance of power. It changes the calculation of deterrence. It creates what Dr. Strangelove would have called a doomsday device gap. And that's really a part of this conversation for sure.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Two Israeli embassy staffers are shot and killed, leaving the Capitol Jewish Museum in Washington. Taken into custody, police say a 30-year-old Chicago man named Elias Rodriguez yelling, "Free, free Palestine." The victims, a young couple, Yaron Leshinsky and Sarah Milgram.
The young man purchased a ring this week with the intention of proposing to his girlfriend next week in Jerusalem.
Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Yekiel Leiter. The event at the museum included a talk about finding humanitarian solutions for Gaza. The House is debating the Republicans' big tax and spending cut bill that could be voted on later this morning.
You know it's a good bill because the left hates it.
Ohio Republican Jim Jordan. Here's Vermont Democrat Becca Ballant.
What kind of nation are we when they choose to take health care away from people, when they choose to add trillions of dollars to the deficit and pass those financial handcuffs off onto our grandchildren?
America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 67 degrees and partly cloudy skies here in Pensacola today. Well, beach residents in Perdido Key had something a bit different wash up on shore yesterday. A massive steel buoy apparently floated all the way from Louisiana.
First, I didn't know what it was. It's got this hole in the back there. I was like, you know, I'm not getting back there. I didn't know what it could be. You know, I had no idea.
And that's Dean Valdez. He's a resident at a condo there nearby. Now, this buoy washed up on Johnson Beach just outside the Land's End of Perdido condo. The buoy apparently not a marker or a navigation buoy, but a massive device that's meant to attract fish, like tuna, for some type of a fishing area in Louisiana. Escambia County officials tell Channel 3 that it's up to the state of Louisiana to come here and pick it up. They say Louisiana has been notified. So far, there's no word on exactly what caused this big buoy to bust loose from its original location. A cantonment man has been found guilty of attempted second-degree murder for a shooting that happened outside of a bowling alley in 2023. Nicholas Valia was found guilty for a shooting at the DeLuna Lanes bowling alley on Nine Mile Road, September of 2023. Prosecutors say Valia shot into a vehicle with three high school teenagers inside after getting into an altercation with them in that bowling alley parking lot. He was arrested a few days after that incident. He's now being held without bond at the Escambia County Jail. He'll be sentenced on June 18th. A 74-year-old man is accused of molesting a 7-year-old girl. Officials say Ronald Miller has been arrested on a molestation charge. He's being held on $1 million bond. The incident reportedly happened May 12th. The victim told deputies she was molested by Miller while she was watching TV at his trailer. Miller denied those allegations. Florida correctional records do show Miller was previously designated as a sex offender after being adjudicated guilty on another molestation charge of a 7 to 9-year-old girl back in 2014. He didn't serve any time in prison for that, but did serve 5 years in state prison from 2007 through 2011 for a separate child abuse and battery charge. Well, for the first time in a decade, you will be able to hunt black bears in Florida. The FWC voted yesterday to endorse a statewide bear hunt that'll take place in December. Up to 187 bears can be killed. The details on that hunt will be finalized in August. It's 5:34 at News Radio 92.3. And let's get a look at our market report from Your Money Now.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. An AI-generated book list with imaginary book titles and non-existent plots has been published by two renowned newspapers, the Chicago Sun-Times and the Philadelphia Inquirer. Titled Summer Reading List for 2025, the roster recommended fake books by actual authors. Reuters reports a powerful national security panel has submitted a recommendation to President Trump on Nippon Steel's $14.9 billion bid for U.S. Steel, without providing further detail on its contents. Reuters could not learn the content of the committee's recommendation. Trump will now have 15 days to decide the fate of the transaction. Microsoft said it has broken down the Luma Stealer malware project with the help of law enforcement officials across the globe. Hackers used the malware to steal passwords, credit cards, bank accounts, and cryptocurrency wallets. The Department of Justice took control of Luma's central command structure and squashed the online marketplaces where bad actors purchased the malware. Futures are currently mixed. That's Your Money Now.
You've built up the equity in your home. Now, a home equity line of credit from Pinair Credit Union can help you put it to great use. So build something incredible, like a backyard oasis or new walk-in shower. Invest in something special, like education or your business. Or just replace your roof. Boring, but important. Whatever you need, a home equity line of credit from Pinair is ready and waiting. And since there's no annual fee and no closing costs, a Pinair home equity line is always a perfect fit. Get started at pinair.org/HELOC. Federally insured by NCUA. Equal housing lender.
We Care Home Hotline. This is Woody.
Woody, I need big help. My husband was working on the lights and he...
I may be small, but I know a thing or two about big jobs. Just call the experts at We Care and maybe take that honey-do list away from your fella. WeCare's HVAC, plumbing and electrical experts have thousands of positive reviews over the last 10 years. Let the gnome protect your home. Schedule online at WeCareHeatandAir.com.
Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Question about not only being Pensacola's airport, but our region's airport. We were able to yet again reaffirm that on Monday. We had huge crowds all weekend, and that culminated yesterday with the busiest day in the history of the airport. We had about 15,400 total passengers in and out. And the second busiest day of all time was July 7th of last year.
Just some random Monday in May. We're not even into tourist season yet. Not really. Holy smokes. I know I had seen all the cars on Tippin and the new lot that was built last year. Or this year, anyway, I always forget. But very, very busy day at the airport. And, you know, for the number of screenings they did and the per-hour capacity, very impressive. D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola, joined me yesterday. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
I still cannot believe. I mean, we must be looking at record-breaking summer this year, and I just, you know, we can't build that second terminal fast enough.
Yeah, you know, if you recall the big issues we had with TSA, I think it's a perfect example. Last year, we had to thanks to Rick Scott, you know, really urged the TSA to get. We had, I think, 8 emergency folks come in like the next day, and then after the assessment was done. The assessment was basically, oh, yeah, it looks like you need, you know, 2 more supervisors, 8 more people, and a couple more machines. You know, it's kind of one of those, not because they didn't want to help, but it was like we've grown so quickly that even, you know, it caught the TSA by surprise, frankly. I mean, to put it, I guess, as simply as possible. I think that's what happened last year. So ever since then, we've been in, you know, we had that rough patch, right, in the spring, summer-ish last year. And then ever since then, all in all, and again, this is something we measure by the hour. So I'm certainly proud of our team. Actually, when I flew to I'm in Fort Myers today for a CareerSource Florida board meeting. When I flew out yesterday, you know, I had an airport employee stop me and say, did you see what happened? You know, they were very proud of the idea of how many people came through and how good a job they did. And they should be.
That's yeah.
Not only our TSA staff, but our airport staff as well.
Yeah, I mean, processing 762 screenings in an hour when full capacity is 600 is pretty good. 31-minute delay at max, yeah. Average delay of 13 minutes for, I mean, that's, again, those are all for the biggest day in the history of the airport. That would have been, the airport would have shut down last year under these circumstances a year ago. But, yeah, no, it's largely been remedied. And great credit to you, to the airport, to TSA, to everybody responding to the crisis. You said you're in Fort Myers for CareerSource Florida. You're there to, what, be on a panel to talk about, like, young adult flight from municipalities. Is that it?
Yeah, so I'm part of the CareerSource Florida board, which, for folks who don't know what that is, that's the workforce development efforts in the state of Florida. Think about CareerSource Escarosa, you hear that around our neck of the woods. That's one chapter of the larger state organization. So it's run through the Department of Commerce, and so I'm on a panel with Alex Kelly, the head of Florida Commerce, and a couple others from the Florida Chamber. And it's to have a conversation. You know, Florida Chamber just came out with some data that said that we're actually seeing a net zero migration with ages 25 to 34. Now, it's probably too early to say that's a trend. But what you can say is, you know, remember, we pump our chest, rightfully so, here in the state of Florida about how many people are moving here post-COVID. But here's this one subset. And the interesting conversation is why. And one, is it going to actually become a trend, or is it just an anomaly? And two, is why?
Is that a decline or an increase? Like, what has it been previously if it's at zero now?
Oh, it's been increasing.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to be sure that was right. Okay.
Way more people coming to Florida. But the weird, when we just got this recent data, the Florida Chamber does a great job of measuring these things. When we just got this recent data, the age bracket of 25 to 34 last year was zero. We had just as many people leaving as we had coming in.
Got it.
Within that subset. And so there's just a little, I mean, again, alarm is not the right word, but it's to speculate as to why that is. Is it cost of living? Is it insurance? Is it health care? Is it child care, which is obviously something I'm going to be talking about down here, because that's the age where you have young children. And you know, do you need to be able to afford child care and a house and insurance? And is it easier to do in the states that people are leaving to in that age bracket, which is South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Texas? Is it easier to make ends meet in those states versus Florida? So interesting conversation. Glad to be part of it, and we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, big concerns, as you said, everything from the price of housing to the availability of childcare to the cost of home insurance or car insurance or medical insurance or, you know, like everything. It seems like it costs
right,
so much.
Right.
You mentioned it, but I do want to make sure people are aware. Childcare access is something that you have, what, convened kind of a summit on, and the idea is to talk with the people who work in this space and see what can the city do either to facilitate, to create, or to get out of the way so that we can have more childcare providers so that people can work, right?
That's right. And the way I put it is there's two truths about childcare access. Number one is we all agree in our community. I've never had a person say we got too much childcare access. Mm. I don't think that's happened. Same kind of like housing. And then secondly is childcare has a positive impact on quality of life, as we all know. That's common sense. It's got an impact. Quality childcare has an impact on education, which we've talked about in many different iterations
right.
in our community for years and years. And we know that that's a struggle for us, education, young education. And last is an economic development. So if you don't have kids, you don't even care about the first two. Well, what you should care about is we want talented people to move here. Then we need access to childcare at all levels. And again, this is not just somebody may say, hey, listen, I don't want to subsidize another program. I don't want – well, we're talking about, like housing, childcare access at all levels. We have an access problem for people that are willing to pay full market rate that don't have enough places to put their kids so they can go be an engineer or an architect or a construction worker. To me, taking on childcare is really – it's one of those rare topics that you get to actually kind of try to solve or improve three issues in one. And that's why I think it's a very interesting thing. And we want to partner with the Children's Trust on that in terms of service.
Right.
We have some buildings that we want to put in play. And so, you know, we have about 39 people RSVP'd. And I think this will be the largest collection of of childcare folks from childcare
but that's
operators.
That's good. That's good. You know, get a lot of voices with a lot of experience.
Excited.
And not to put a giant exclamation mark underlined and bolded or anything, but your comment is this is what you are doing with the Children's Trust. The city of Pensacola has established a very functional relationship with the Children's Trust to fund, in this case, you know, child care and child care access, which perfectly fits within their mission of preparation and within your mission of doing all the three things you said. And I mean, I've been talking this morning about the struggles at the county, but so it's good to see. It's good to see that the city is doing this, you know, a little bit more effectively. You were talking about spaces and activities, and I don't really feel like I understand the Southern Youth Sports Association, CISA, plan for Legion Field. What's going on here? You talked about it yesterday, but I don't understand it.
Yeah, so as you know, there's the Theopolis May Center is already at Legion Field, and we have an arrangement with Southern Youth Sports Association in terms of getting shared use of that building. That, I think that was constructed during the Hayward administration. Flash forward to now, that CISA has gone out and privately funded what's going to be the Rafferty Center, you know, about $3 million for a building, privately funded, not asking other than the dirt, not asking anything of the city. So, you know, it's
at Legion Field, though, like at that same location.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Contiguous. That right. Contiguous on empty property there. So our contribution to that and what I'm proposing to council on Thursday is that we have a up to maintenance number that we've actually gone and measured with our maintenance and facilities director of what we think that would be. And, you know, if our contribution over 40 years of time and we have an opportunity where the city is not having to pay for the building at all. Because I was asked the question, well, Mayor, you know, you're very serious about not wanting to maintain more things. Yeah, well, there's two different conversations. One is maintaining aging infrastructure that we neglected, that we're on the hook for no matter what. And then another is someone coming to us and saying, we would like to fund the entire thing. You know, there's going to be maintenance at Hollis T. Williams. There's going to be maintenance at Fricker Center when we redo that. But those, we've gotten a combined $50 million of outside money to help construct. So those are two different conversations and the impact on kids. So, you know, we clarified, I know there's been some heartburn with council members over the shared agreement at the existing structure. We clarified some of that, you know, in both the old and the new agreements. And at the end of the day, we've got an organization that's been here a long time that helps support kids. And they're coming in to build a building to work on that support and to give more opportunity for the youth of the city. So I certainly support it. We'll see what the council's conversation is on Thursday and go from there.
Well, it seems like a big win for everybody. So, you know, it sounds wonderful. Quickly, I just wanted to give people, we haven't talked about this much. I think we might have mentioned it in passing when you're first setting it up, but the Artist in Residence program, when this was first announced,
yeah.
I loved the idea that you'd kind of have, you know, an art major type person who would be in charge of facilitating, informing, not necessarily directing and deciding, but just helping us have a better eye towards beautification across the city, whether it's street art or murals or whatever. That makes sense to me. Is that where are we at?
Yeah. Well, when I came in and you know, I always remind folks, in my previous life as a brewery owner, I might have been the biggest mural customer. You know, I had one. I've had several commissioned at my own businesses, and so I've always had a interest in that—not just murals and art. And,
yeah.
And when I got here, we had had a through ARPA funding and had a full-time position paid for, but we really weren't getting the productivity out of that job that needed to happen, and we wanted to be better stewards of the dollar. I didn't foresee this as a full-time position that the taxpayer needs to be funding, but what we were missing without any representation is someone comes and says, well, we want to put this statue in a park, or mm-hmm. we don't really have that expert seat at the table. And so this is the happy medium that we found, and it helps us engage the art community. It's not just a city employee. This is someone that's integrated in the art community, and what I hope is, and Danny DeCastro is doing it now, and she's amazing, and her job one is to actually set up the program. I mean, so it's sustainable moving forward, and what we would want to see is every year or 2 years that it be a different artist and a different medium, you know, and that they have some type of representation. So not only can they help represent the city in these conversations and at, you know, about festivals, about all those things where we need some expertise in the room, but it also allows us to do a better job of engaging the art community, because when we go travel, what do we see? We go look for that. We're attracted to beautiful places and
right.
beautiful art and all of that. So we can better integrate that into our city by having some representation. So it was just about finding that right niche. I don't think zero representation is good. I also don't think the taxpayer that we necessarily are need or are even ready to have somebody full time only working on this. So we're going to take that stepping stone approach and try to use money wisely and see how this goes. So she had a big meeting on May 12th with all the artists. So it's been good.
No, I'm a big believer. I mean, I love, as you say, these are the things you notice when you go to a community. It's placemaking. I noticed the murals at PSC when they put up the new art there, and when we're driving along the road or see a statue or whatever, you know, the Bensons put one in right. The park, you know, all of that stuff. I love it. More is better, in my opinion. We always like to end with the lightning round. Quick questions, quick answers. What song in the life of DC Reeves do you believe you have heard the most times, if you had to take a guess?
Oh, man. Golly. I think you've stumped me. The first thing I think of is which annoying song when I was a when Caroline was like 1 or 2 years
exactly,
old.
Exactly, right? You know, kid songs.
Which one did I not get out of my head? You know, something from Daniel the Tiger or something probably would be the one that stuck in my head for life.
All right, fair enough.
No, I don't know. What was yours?
Oh, so I've heard Jack and Diane, I think, more times than any other song. Not counting like Star Spangled Banner, you know, for example, which is a pretty good answer too. But for whatever reason, Jack and Diane is the ubiquitous song on, you know, 80s and 90s radio when I'm driving. Would you rather be behind a bad driver, or would you rather pass them and then be in front of them and have them risk running into the back of you? Which one is your preference?
I just go ahead and get out in front of them. I feel like my speed's more predictable than theirs? So I don't know. I heard right? you talking about this, but I didn't hear your answer. I'm gonna go ahead and get out in front of them.
I'm a passer. I'm a passer. I'd rather pass them. Yeah. And, you know, look back in contempt as I'm passing. And then the last one is, and this is actually relevant to your job. So okay, here goes. In your opinion, what's the worst parking lot in Pensacola? The parking lot you avoid because the parking lot experience itself is so frustrating.
Ooh, parking lot I avoid. Well, listen, Andrew, parking's so convenient throughout the city of Pensacola that it's going to be very difficult.
I love all of my parking spaces. They're so beautiful. It's so easy.
Parking spot in the city. Yeah, it's going to have to be in the county or in Santa Rosa or something.
All right, I'll give you the answer, and you'll know it's the right answer as soon as I say it. Fresh Market.
Okay, what is it?
Fresh Market, ninth and Airport.
Oh, yeah, getting in and out of that one's a tough one.
No, it's a beast.
You're right.
Yeah, no, that's and everybody agreed. That was the absolute worst one. So, hey, while you're fixing problems that aren't your responsibility, if you can get them to do parking better at that, I mean, everybody will love you. Mayor D.C. Reeves, always a pleasure, sir. We look forward to city council meeting tomorrow night. Thank you, as always, for the time, and safe travels back from Fort Myers.
All right, thanks.
I mean, I got him on the phone. I might as well ask. You know, maybe the mayor can work some magic and get them to improve parking at the Fresh Market. You know, you never know what might happen. Hey, if you're thinking about getting a new vehicle or just looking, maybe you're kind of in the, you know, you just had to put a couple hundred or thousand dollars into a car, and you're like, man, this is not going to last forever because we're getting to the place with this car where it's more money than it would be to just buy a new one. That's when you start looking. And when I say that, I mean, don't wait until it's a crisis. The time to go looking for a car is like kind of don't shop for groceries when you're hungry. Don't shop for a car when you need one because it's stress, it's anxiety, it's urgency. It's all the things that you don't want when you're making a major purchase. So instead, go when you don't need it. Go ahead of time. You know, if you think it's coming maybe 5 or 6 months ahead of time, that's what we did. We went looking to test drive a Honda Odyssey when we thought that's what we wanted, but we weren't sure. And we were having trouble finding one to test drive for a variety of complicated factors that, you know, doesn't really have time to explain, but the truth was we could not drive one. Well, Frontier had one, so we drove it, intending to not buy. And the price was really good, and we're like, well, that's a good price. Can you come down? And they said yes, and I said, can you give me a day? And they said yes, and I said, and the day later, I said, well, can you come down a little bit more? And they said yes, and I said, well, can we buy it? And they said yes, and now I have a car. I'm like, it was really that easy. But the reason we wound up buying for them, obviously because, you know, great price, great quality vehicle, was just they had one. Selection is really one of the things they've got going for them. You know, the typical car buying process is what? You want to go drive 6 different kinds of cars, you got to go to 6 different places. And then you got to meet 6 different salespeople. And then you got to give your driver's license 6 different times. And then you got to tell them your life story 6 different times. And then they got to, you go to one place, drive as many as you like. And then if you want to buy something, do it. Or if you're just getting information and make a decision later, that's fine too. No problem. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Right behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. I know you want to leave
me, but I refuse to let you go. Ain't Too Proud is a celebration that brings the audience to its feet. Ain't Too Proud to bear. Ain't Too Proud. The Grammy.
Grammy-winning songs. The Tony-winning moves.
Ain't Too Proud to be.
Ain't Too Proud. The Life and Times of the Temptations. June 4th and 5th, Pensacola Sanger Theater. On sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
You may think that when you file an insurance claim, the insurance company will do what they're supposed to do and pay out the claim. But insurance companies don't provide manuals to get fair insurance claim settlements. That's where Claimology steps in, giving you a voice when you've suffered property damage or business loss. Don't get lost when filing a claim. Contact Claimology, 888-774-7557 or Claimology.com. Claimology, now, the art and science of application of fair insurance claim settlements.
Hi, it's Bess Marks with Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor. I want to read a little letter that I got from a wonderful friend. And she said, oh my gosh, wow, Bess, you and the Lazy Boy design team, you nailed it. We love it. We just can't believe it's ours. And that's what we call a standing ovation for our design team. Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor, Mobile, Pensacola, and Spanish Fort. Just like a picture out of a magazine.
Hey, hey, Pensacola pet parents. Got questions about your fur babies? Well, I'm Dr. Mark Sprayberry, owner of Olive Branch Pet Hospital. I would like to invite you and your friends to tune in to the all-new Pet Talk, where I'll be answering all your questions live on air.
Tune in today at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
What the hell are we supposed to use, man? Harsh language?
It's like, it sounds like James Brown, but it doesn't sound like James Brown. That's the heavy. The heaviest band. Yeah, they got a lot of good stuff. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. Two women are facing charges related to that jailbreak in New Orleans. They're accused of helping some of those escapees evade capture for almost a week now. Five escapees so far been caught. Five are still on the lam. On the lam's my favorite phrase I never get to use.
They're on the lam, see? If they don't show up at the diner, see? In the next 5 minutes, we're going to take it to their family, see?
Any excuse to use that that phrase. Kim Kardashian's taking a major step towards becoming a lawyer. She now has a degree in hand. The 44-year-old reality star held a backyard graduation ceremony in Beverly Hills after earning her law degree through California's apprenticeship program. Her mentor says she spent 18 hours a week studying for 6 years.
Okay. Cool. Good for her.
That's it. That's pretty much what I've got.
Okay. All right. Yeah. 18 hours a week is a very part-time rate, though. But usually a law degree is 3 years, so 6 years. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. David, thanks so much for the update. Oh, we had a... How should I describe this exactly? One of those, like, we actually learned a thing moments. John, you and I are watching TV. Fox News is doing a special on the USS New York.
Right.
And they've got, who was it? Was it Kilmeade? I didn't notice who it was. Who was doing the report? And somebody was on the inside of a Navy ship talking to the commanding officer, doing an interview. And we're both looking at that thinking, well, that looks really familiar.
It does.
That looks really familiar. And I'm like, that looks like the inside of an amphibious ship, like the McCool. And I mean, it looks really familiar. And I thought, well, I mean, I'm sure many ships look similar on the inside. So, okay. But no, I looked it up. And it's in fact, it's an LPD. It's exactly the right. It's the LPD-21. The McCool's the LPD-29. So,
and I think the coolest part is it was built with steel from the World 9/11. Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh! That's the
USS
headline
New York
that caught
is
my
built
attention.
With remanufactured
yes.
steel from the buildings.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness, no, that is powerful.
That is absolutely 5:59 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, speaking of ships, the Chinese have a new aircraft carrier. I mean, relatively new. It's kind of been going through its trials or whatever. Interesting note. First of all, it's their first aircraft carrier that's a flat deck. that does not have the little ski jump front, okay? Second, it is apparently it has electromagnetic catapults. So it's the same kind that are on the Gerald Ford. It's not the piston and compression, you know, pneumatic ones that we've had for decades and decades. It's the more modern ones. And that, I mean, that's just an interesting note to realize, because that allows you to operate more quickly and, you know, basically to carry more, to send more. It's only got, I was looking at the deck design, and our aircraft carriers usually have, I think, three elevators, you know, three on one side, one on the other. Theirs only has two. I'm not quite sure why that design, but this is a big deal. 80,000 tons. Ours are more in the 100,000-ton category, but this is a big development for them. Stream us at